With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Lots of things are better together. Hockey, food, golf. How about a cold one on the patio during a nice spring day? But if you really want to take things to the next level, drink some Labatt Blue Lights with your friends and live life to the power of we. Always enjoy responsibly. Beer, Labatt USA, Buffalo, New York.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
First ever virtual draft of the NFL. We are not virtually coming to you. We're literally coming to you. It's AD and Mike here with you on the GM Shuffle, breaking down what was an eventful round one. First and foremost, Mike, what'd you think of the setup? Roger Goodell in his basement, virtual booing. I mean, they set that up. It was a little canned, but I mean, he was trying to be a little masterpiece theater for you.
Yeah.
And then you have all these shots of all these different coaches. John Gruden sitting there. I mean, what'd you think of that whole setup?
I mean, I was trying to evaluate the setups, you know, as like, I mean, Mayock looked like he was in a hallway, like, you know, it like was weird. And then, you know, Vrabel looked like it was weird. Like Vrabel looked like that they had some guy taking a dump. I mean, somebody sent me a picture of a guy's taking a dump in the background. I mean, you know, it was interesting to evaluate the team's rooms. I mean, you know, their setups and how they were all, you know, they know the camera's on them, so they're trying to pretend that they don't think the camera's, it's all so good. But, you know, the Vrabel room, I mean, I think that might go down for the ages is one of the weirdest things I've ever seen in my life.
And that's why in this day and age, you know, Twitter's so great, because you're right, as soon as you see it, somebody's going to post it. So if you missed it in real time, you go, wait, oh, there it is. We can break it down like the Zapruder film.
Yeah, exactly. And the guy's on the, you know, classic, he's on the phone, he's on his phone taking a dump. I mean, like, serious. And the other thing that was pretty clear to me is nobody was paying attention to the corona 6-foot rule. Like that 6-foot rule was thrown out the window. Obviously, you know, everybody was there. So, I mean, I thought it was fun. I mean, I didn't really pay attention as much to the coverage. You know, I mean, I think I felt bad for Mel because, Mel's board and most of these guys' board were all over. You know, the thing I found really interesting is, and this is not a disrespect to Mel, because Mel's been doing it for years, but ESPN has all these people that I'm watching this yesterday, and it hit me, nobody on the broadcast last night has ever made a pick. No one ever turned a card in. No one's ever made a trade. Like, that just blows me away, you know? Like I've been in a lot of draft rooms, and I've had the title of general manager and the director of player personnel, but was I in complete control of every draft? No, but I've made trades, and I've made picks, right? They're not all my picks. Some of them good, a lot of them bad, whatever, you know? But I think what I find fascinating is how the worldwide leader can create a someone and then continue it on. Like at some point, don't you want a guy who's can analyze the trades, the moves, the value? Like, where is that coming from? It's not McFarland. I mean, you know, Booger's never done it before, right? You know, I mean, I just found it fascinating that we didn't have anybody. Kurt Warner's never done it. You know, Michael Irvin's never done it. Like at some point, when do you shift the draft to somebody with some expertise in that area? I mean, look, ESPN's got Tannenbaum. I mean, why isn't Tannenbaum on there? You know, or why isn't Charlie Casserly on there? I mean, at least those guys have been in the room. I'm not saying I would agree with them. So that was what struck me. And then bookshelves too. Like I'm going to give a shout out to my man, Sal Palantonio. He had Gridiron Genius right behind him. I'm proud of him. you know, Mike Reese, I'm proud of him. You know, like, I was looking for gridiron genius. I mean, you know, Lewis Riddick had Bill Walsh's book. He had Ernie Accorsi's book behind him, you know, and I'm like, you know, I mean, my book's not good enough to get on your shelf, Lewis, seriously. You know, like, you were on our team in 94.
Well, think of it. I'm sure we all know this too. How many of these guys have actually read these books? You could probably just hire a firm and go, hey, can you give me a collection of books that will make me look like a real intellectual and somebody who really reads a lot, studies a lot? Yeah, something by Patton. Okay, great. Maybe a little Thoreau, like a little philosophy. Like, yeah, put it right there, conveniently display it. That's funny.
My man Bill was like texting me and you know, he's like, look, Desmond Howard he's got Michael Jackson on the record player behind him. And now it's Miles Davis. And all of a sudden it went to, you know, Bob Marley or whoever. Like, everybody was fascinated with the backdrops of what they had. And you're right. Like, did you read these books? Seriously. Did you read all these books? Like, come on.
Trey Wingo alone on an island in Bristol and then having to navigate with all these different people. I mean, that is an enviable job by Trey. And I think technically speaking, it went pretty well. Like you said, free spin to have all these people, NFL draft and ESPN. But that's a good point you make, Mike, about no front office guy. Every single draft, you look at the NBA draft, of course, there's always a former GM that's there. If you look at any sort of other sport, that's an interesting point. I don't know why they wouldn't, considering ESPN, all the bells and whistles they put out there, this is their Super Bowl.
Yeah, you would think so. I mean, now, obviously, Seth Markham, he loves Jet people. I mean, that's why ESPN is filled with Jet guys. He's a Jet fan. I mean, but wouldn't you want somebody to explain, you know, the situations that are going on, the conversations, you know, because none of those guys, and I don't mean it in any disrespect to any of them, like, and I'm not arrogant enough, but it goes back to Cosell's jockocracy. Like, the one thing I know for sure is the players have no idea about the draft. Like, what I could still remember when Ozzie Newsome came upstairs and he looked at me and said, I can't fucking believe this. Like, I had no idea what you guys did up here. Like, and Ozzie just took a pencil and pen out, you know, and a notebook out. He started writing shit down and he was painted. But they have really no idea. And when they get out of the game, I mean, like, seriously, how many players do you think Michael Irvin watched it for this draft to prepare for? Like, you know, Like Lewis and poor Todd McShay had coronavirus, but I mean, you know, like a Daniel Jeremiah. I mean, Daniel Jeremiah is a great guy. I think he's tremendous, but he's been an area scout. He's never made a pick, you know, and I think he does a tremendous job. But to me, you're the worldwide leader. You're running. You got the draft. Like, you got to have somebody. Like, there's 1,000 guys. You go Randy Mueller. You can go get, like, there's Jerry Angelo. There's guys on the street that could come in there and start explaining it to you and tell you exactly what's going on, you know, but they just, you know, it doesn't fit the narrative, and the worldwide leader can generate the story, right? You know, I mean, Mel's been doing this for 100 years, but like Mel's like that would be good to have somebody that's actually made a pick on TV.
Well, that's a good point you made, Mike, as well, as far as the fact that, listen, it's a different year. We obviously missed Todd McShay. Would have been nice to have him and Mel going back and forth. But as far as a moment that I think, if there had been a live presence there, you would have heard the crowd clamoring, the guys getting fired up, was when Green Bay trades up for a quarterback and life coming full circle. In 2004, the Packers selected Aaron Rodgers as the heir apparent to Brett Favre. Now, Rodgers, right around the same age as Favre, 2020, the Packers trade up to 26 to select Jordan Love. This is surprising because you would have thought, hang on, the Packers are getting another weapon for Aaron Rodgers, a wide receiver perhaps, in a deep wide receiver draft. And we all know Aaron Rodgers probably not going to take this well. Although, you try to learn from the past, Mike, those who do not learn from history are doomed to repeat it. You hope he'll handle it better than Brett Favre. But I was surprised by this pick for the Packers. They really fell in love with Love.
Yeah, they did. And I asked this question. There's a buddy of mine, not in the league, but kind of wired into Green Bay. And I said, do you think, because I kind of had a sense that Green Bay was thinking about Love. People in the league had told me. And I said, do you think that Green Bay knows that Aaron Rodgers is on the downside? Like, I know it's not popular narrative to talk about Aaron Rodgers being on the downside, but let's just have some facts here. You know, from 2008 to 2014, Aaron Rodgers averaged 8.2 yards per attempt over that span. Okay, since 2014, when he was at 8.4, the last 5 years, he's averaged 7.1 yards per attempt. 7.1. That's not good. That's not good enough. And considering he's a full yard down from where he was when he was in his heyday, that's a telltale sign that your quarterback's slipping. That's a telltale sign that something's going on. Now, people could say, well, you know, he doesn't have any weapons. Okay, fine. Russell Wilson, you know, does he have a lot of weapons? I mean, Russell will have a bad year. Maybe I think he had 1 year at like 7-4, but the next year he's right back up to 8-2. You know, it's like at some point, you know, the quarterback makes those plays. And I think, look, Rodgers does a tremendous job protecting the football. He doesn't turn it over. But unfortunately, he hasn't made a lot of big plays. And so at 7-1, you know, you're clamoring for big plays. And look at the offense that the Packers had last year. I mean, just take an examination of it and just be honest about where they were in terms of third down offense, 23rd. Points in the last eight games, 23rd. 20-yard plays offensively, 26th. Opponent able to win the game. I mean, scoring at the end of the half, 27th. Those are all – that should be Aaron Wilson's – that should be Aaron Rodgers' hey moment. But it hasn't been. So if you're Brian Gutekunst and you're saying to yourself, look, I'm seeing this decline and I like this player, I probably should take a chance of it. So the guy said to me, oh, no, they're fully aware of it there. They're fully aware of it there in Green Bay. So that made me think. And I think that when New England was on the clock, I really thought Miami was going to draft Love. I was told that by somebody in the league. I really believe that because the source that told me that's usually never wrong. But obviously Miami duped me and went to Tua, which we can talk about that later. But I think that once New England was on the phone with Green Bay talking about trading down, and then Green Bay pulled out at the last minute. And because of that, I think that, you know, Green Bay kind of thought that they were going to take Love, and New England ended up trading that pick to the Chargers, who typically never trade anyway. And that's when Green Bay got back onto it. So I got to tell you, AD, I applaud Brian Gutekunst. I think this was, it takes balls. I think, but his job as the general manager of the franchise is to protect the franchise. And I think he did it. Look, Love's not going to play next year. You've already paid Rodgers a mega amount of deal, you know, and Rodgers could say he wants more players. Well, you're not the general manager, Aaron. We'll get you more players, but you're not the GM. Your job is to play quarterback, you know, and my job is to protect the franchise.
Yeah, and ultimately you go with the best player available and you look at a long-term future, and rather than this, you talked about this yesterday, we were talking about mistakes that people can make sometimes, impulsivity and impatience. And in this case, the Packers are being patient. And yep, he's not the answer right now, but one day he's going to be, and we believe he can be our star quarterback. Let's get to Tua Tagovailoa, Mike. You mentioned him. The Dolphins take him at number 5. This, to me, was the most interesting pick. Although, actually, you know what? Let's do the Giants just for a second here, number 4, because I thought they might go with Tristan Wirfs or Mekhi Becton, something like that. But clearly, Dave Gettleman wanted to go safe here in terms of a tackle. So the first three were no surprises here. Of course, we knew that Burrow was going to happen. Chase Young. Okuda for the Lions, by the way. I think that's a – we talked about this. That's a dicey move at number 3. I mean, to have an elite corner, you think he's going to be worth that? Okay, fine. But the Lions go with Okuda, who a lot of people were expecting to go from the Lions, from Ohio State.
But I actually wasn't. I was told that the Lions, I think there was a split in the Lions front office, the Lions organization. I think Patricia wanted the defensive lineman. I think Quinn wanted Okuda, whatever, however you say his name. And it's not since Sean Spring was drafted in 1973 as a corner been picked this high. I mean, Deion Sanders wasn't even picked this high. Rod Woodson wasn't even picked this high. Like, to me, like, if you just take a class, team building 101, and you have a defensive lineman who can rush the passer, who can penetrate from the inside against a corner, you know, you got to take the D lineman. I mean, I think Detroit made a blunder, and I think that Matt Rhule benefited from it by getting Brown at 7. You know, I just think, to me, it was a really bad pick. And if you're going to take, and obviously they couldn't trade the pick, but I think Quinn put his balls on the line here. I think he's going to have to see, because there's a lot of people in the league, AD, that think that C.J. Henderson is better than Okuda. You know, they think he's better. So, you know, there's a lot of debate on this. Plus a lot of people that I talked to in the league couldn't warm up to the kid. You know, it was not a real comfortable thing. And that pick, I think, is really going to be mulled over. And then, obviously, the Giants pick at 4. I think, you know, look, I didn't know what tackle they would. I was thinking they were going to take Wirfs because of the Iowa connection, but they went with Thomas.
Yeah, clearly, in this case, the Giants didn't want to make a risky move. And if you look at what people have said, Thomas, a fairly safe decision there at number 4. Now we get to Tua. This was the one, Mikey. All right, are they going to go Herbert? They're going to go Tua? Do they got the balls to do it? Instead, they go with Tua. He's likely going to be a backup next season behind Ryan Fitzpatrick, but clearly they believe the upside is there. And this is a guy who's been to 2 national championships. Of course, we know he's won one, but he's got serious injury concerns. I always like when a team has got some guts. As you said, the Packers were pretty gutsy moving up. But for the Dolphins, this is going to be risk versus reward. I think years from now, when you look at this draft, you say, hey, was Miami smart to take Tua? Or what I believe is going to happen. He's talented, but he's injury prone.
Yeah. I mean, this one, I look, you know how I feel on it. I would have never done this. To me, this is a really risky position. And they're gonna live and die with it. I mean, look, they rolled the dice. I mean, there was a lot of people in the league that thought they were not on him. They thought they were back on Herbert. I was wrong, admittedly, from the information that I got. They decoyed a lot of people in terms of that. Maybe they wanted Andrew Thomas as the tackle, and they settled on Tua because he was the highest rated player on their board, and they couldn't get to Detroit. I was told that, you know, Miami was going to have a hard time getting to Detroit because of the relationship between the Lions and the Dolphins in terms of making that deal between Quinn and between Bob Quinn, the general manager, and Brian Flores. I'm not sure that those two guys are on the same wavelength. So maybe they couldn't make a trade. Maybe Miami didn't want to make a trade after all. Maybe they were just throwing up smoke screens. I think no one will know that for certain. But this is a huge risk for me. I mean, look, I think, and I've been documented on it, and you know, we've talked about it. I think you can't ignore it. We're going to see how it's going to work out. And, you know, I mean, I thought they were going to go with somebody that they could absolutely say in their hearts, this guy is going to be a blue chip player for the next 10 years, and maybe it'll be Tua. I just don't see that.
It's an awfully, awfully risky decision. After that, the Chargers get Justin Herbert, a guy who certainly looks the part. Shrieky, as Mel Kiper said, but when he's been strong, was great in the Senior Bowl. People love the fact he looks the part. Like I said, big, strong, range. He can move things with his legs and his feet. So the Chargers get their quarterback. But here's the one I have for you. And talking about being in the room, this I found to be a very interesting development, as I'm sure you did too, Mike. 5 years since there was no movement in the top 10 in the draft. People are thinking there's going to be moves made. No one's doing anything. There was rumors the Dolphins are going to move up for a tackle, but the Dolphins and the Chargers both stayed put, got their quarterbacks. One of my friends said, conspiracy theory. The NFL had already gotten their picks because they didn't want to have technical snafus and no issues, and that's why it seems so seamless. No trade announced until all of a sudden you see Adam Schefter pop up at 13 when the Patriots went ahead and got Tristan Wirfs to try to protect Tom Brady. Surprised by the way Wirfs is available. Nice move for them. You can slot in at right tackle. But what'd you make of the lack of moves in the top 10 for trades?
Well, I actually think that, you know, that the Lions and the Giants, as hard as they tried to advertise that their ability to trade, didn't do it. I mean, obviously Miami felt like that, you know, they didn't have to move to get Tua because of all the noise about him being his health concerns, which there was plenty of them. You know, and then we knew the Chargers were not going to blink. I didn't think the Chargers were going to blink. Now, I do know this. I do know that Carolina probably had offers for the seventh pick, and Carolina just did the smart thing, and they took the defensive lineman. I mean, you know, I'm sure Carolina had a chance to get out of there if they wanted to pick up an extra third-round pick. But in reality, why would you do that? Like, just take the best. You got a gift. Bob Quinn just gave you the great gift. He just put a gift in your lap. Why not take it? And so that's what they did. I think there would have been a movement there. And I think Arizona might have moved if Isaiah Simmons wasn't there, you know. And so I think that happened. And so that created not the movement. The Tampa trade with San Francisco, to me, was shocking because you went up one spot. Unless you were convinced somebody from behind was trying to get worse, was it Miami? You know, it wasn't going to be Dallas. It wasn't going to be Atlanta. It wasn't going to be Denver. You know, where were you worried about the potential hit from them? You know, that's what I couldn't really quite figure that move out. But they did. They gave up. They threw away a fourth-round pick. But they got themselves a right tackle, a guy they need to help with Tom Brady.
Yeah, and they're hoping that worse can fall in the line, all those great Iowa offensive linemen, a guy like Brian Bulaga. And like you see, he can step in right away and help out Brady, who is turning 43 in August. Back to a guy you mentioned, Isaiah Simmons, because you're right. He fell in the lap of the Cardinals. I mean, this guy is fantastic. People say Derwin James, a little bit of potential, a former Clemson star. He can play anywhere. I mean, originally there was a thought that he could be going to the Giants at four because of the fact he can do so many things in the field. But you talk about a so-called do-it-everything, Mike. He's got 200-plus snaps at corner, 100-plus inside-outside linebacker, 71 as a pass rusher, 17 as a perimeter corner. Nice pickup for the Cardinals at number eight where you didn't think he might be available.
Right, and I think it's all depend on how that Vance Joseph uses him. I mean, and that's really going to be the key because he's not really a linebacker and he's not really a safety. He's somewhere in between, you know? And so when you break down in the Arizona Cardinals defense last year, in 23 passing snaps, stats on defense, 23 of them, they were 31st or lower on passing. So that involves third down, all these things, right? When they blitzed, they were 31st. When they allowed first downs passing, they were 31st. Plays over 20 yards, 32nd. So their defense was beyond bad, right? And so they had to do something for him. So now what does Vance Joseph, are they going to be able to do with Isaiah Simmons? There were three props I really liked on VSiN that I talked about on Thursday. I talked about it on Wednesday. I loved Isaiah Simmons and the over prop. It was over 6.5. I thought that was a win. That was a winner. I loved Derek Brown under 8. That was a winner. And I loved C.J. Henderson under 12. That was a winner. Those are three that I felt really good about, and they went right back three in a row, 7, 8, 9. Brown, Simmons, and Henderson. And so, you know, that's a winner-winner chicken dinner there. I told Pat McAfee's guy, I'm going to do Pat McAfee's show later. I just, you know, I told him on Thursday afternoon to only bet as much as you're willing to win on those three props, and they came out. So, but I think Isaiah Simmons's career is going to be determined by who the coordinator is. Can Vance Joseph use him in the right way? I think that's going to be the key.
Cliff Kingsbury and his palatial estate clearly had to show up. Everybody just sitting there hanging out.
I mean, how about that,
unbelievable,
man?
Right? These guys probably put so much effort. There's no way that's his house. Cliff just rented that for the night to look good, didn't he?
You know, I think real estate's probably pretty cheap in Scott. Not cheap, but I think, you know, if you're making like what he's making, $6 million a year, I think he can get a pretty palatial estate in Scottsdale. You know, I don't think it's like, you know, living in the Bay Area, you know, and so, but, you know, hey, God bless him. You know, he's doing well.
You're right. The money can go a little further there. We're going to take a quick break here on the GM Shuffle. When we come back, I want to ask Mike about the Cowboys. The fact, I thought they're going to take a defensive player. Instead, they take wide receiver CeeDee Lamb. And also, the Raiders are always going to surprise you, aren't they? Damon Arnett in the top 20. Didn't see that coming. All that more coming up next.
The NBA playoffs are heating up, and so is the action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. With same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more, don't miss out as the NBA postseason winds down. I mean, these second-round playoffs have been unreal, and we have the conference finals now on the horizon. Make sure you get all those futures bets in before the value disappears. And if you're new to DraftKings, you gotta check this out. New customers bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets instantly. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code SHUFFLE. That's code SHUFFLE for new customers to get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5 only on DraftKings. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available. For problem gambling, call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
So I saw a lot of Cowboys fans fired up on my timeline, Mike. They said, listen, they've got to get a defensive player, a defensive back or an edge rusher. They talked about C.J. Henderson, who you like. He was gone in the top 10. Agent Terrell was gone a pick before. You still think defense? No, they go with CeeDee Lamb, giving Dak Prescott another weapon in a wide receiver draft they couldn't resist. What'd you think of the play? Because I see some Cowboys fans second-guessing this morning, saying you should have gone with defense.
Well, you know, I think this. Just watching the TV, again, I think this is where ESPN really misses somebody that actually had, you know, has made decisions. And look, I'm not lobbying for the job. I have no interest. I'm not doing that. I don't want people to think that. But I think we miss the dynamics of what's going on. I could tell from my chair, and I was texting my man Bill, because he's a Cowboy fan. I'm like, they're not sure what they want to do. Like, I think what happened to the Cowboys is, so there's two boards. We talked about this before. There's two boards. There's the vertical board, which is the players lined up at positions, right? So all the quarterbacks ranked 1 through 10 or 20, how many you have on your draft board. And then all the receivers. And then there's your horizontal board, which is the value of the players as it relates to different positions. So, you know, if I have an offensive tackle who's a 68, and I have a corner who's a 68, who's the better 68? And it's not based on need. Like, somebody's better. Like, somebody's better. There's the better player, right? And I think what happened to the Cowboys, AD, is when it came time to their pick, they never suspected CeeDee Lamb would be there. I don't think they ever did. And I think that they had him so high on their horizontal board that to take Chaisson, who was a guy they were talking about picking, or McKinney, the safety from Alabama, who they were also talking about picking, just didn't make any sense. And so now they just said, okay, screw it. We're going to stay to our board. We're going to pick the best player. You know, Atlanta could have easily done it, but Atlanta was locked in on a corner. You're not going to tell me A.J. Terrell was graded higher on Atlanta's board than C.D. Lamb. You're just not going to tell me that. Now, you could say, well, they had the same grade. Bullshit. That's a bullshit. That's a lie. That's a lie, too. That's a lie. You know, they're not, you know? And so you just can't. No, you could make the case that Kinlaw at South Carolina for the 49ers was rated higher than C.D. Lamb. I'll go there. But don't tell me A.J. Terrell's rated higher than C.D. Lamb. You just went with your need, which, fine, that's okay. But don't come out talking about how we stuck true to the board. The Cowboys, I applaud them. They stuck true to their board. Look, they're going to be really hard to play on offense. They were hard to play on offense last year. I mean, where the Cowboys got screwed last year is they were 31st in the National Football League in the close games. They couldn't win a close game. But their offense moved the football. Yeah, they need defensive help. You know, you put C.D. Lamb's on the field, and he's going to go against the third corner, right? Because, you know, Amari's going to draw the coverage, Gallup's going to get whatever he gets, and C.D. Lamb's going to be the beneficiary of probably being a number one player against probably the third corner with Zeke in the backfield. I mean, that's a pretty potent offense. I applaud the Cowboys, and you could just see it on their faces. I could see Jerry from his facial expressions and McCarthy, they were surprised the player was there and they did the right thing.
You mentioned Atlanta there in passing. Ke'Lavon Chaisson was on the board at 16. You thought maybe you go to Atlanta, but you're right. They stuck with what they wanted, which was a corner and A.J. Terrell. A lot of people thought he was late round one, maybe even round two. So that was an interesting surprise there. Another one here, you mentioned the Cowboys going with who they wanted and CeeDee Lamb. Surprised he was there. How about Damon Arnett? The Raiders take him. Red flags for his speed and shorter arms. The league likes tall, long defenders in the boundary. Instead, the Raiders take him, and even though people had him a lot further down on their draft boards, he's a day one starter for that defense. What did you think of Mayock and Gruden going with Arnett?
I mean, look, I loved Henry Ruggs. I think Henry Ruggs was their Tyreek Hill. So I'm not an anti-Raider guy here. I think that was a great pick. I know a lot of people in the league that loved Ruggs. And Ruggs was a guy that people really respected and could he's their Tyreek Hill. He can put the ball into the end zone, right? So I was not against that. But to me, this pick, wow. This is like last year when they pick Farrell. I mean, like, where did this come from? Like, this doesn't make any sense. I mean, it's one thing to like him, but, like, I know from looking at people's boards, like, I'm looking at one board right now that had Damon Arnett in the third round. Had Damon Arnett in the third round. They had Gladney ahead of him. They had the Auburn kid ahead of him. They have the Jalen Johnson kid from Utah ahead of him. Fulton from LSU ahead of him. So, like, I'm looking, like third round. I mean, like, at some point, you know, you could say, well, you know, like, okay, for example, Jordan Brooks from Texas Tech. People might say Seattle reached for that player. But I'm just telling you, you watch any Jordan Brooks tape, that guy's a really good player. He's short, no doubt. He's short. But that guy's a tackling machine who gives their defense more speed in the front seven. Remember, when your mic's slow, your defense is slow. They get a Will linebacker that can go make plays. I mean, wow, watch out. Jordan Brooks will be a tackling machine for Seattle. I don't fault that one. I just don't see the Arnett pick at all. Like, I didn't get that one. And, you know, look, the Raiders defensively, you couldn't get any worse than they were last year on defense. And I think the Raiders, I'm not sure they've improved on defense this year.
You mentioned Jordan Brooks. People thought he'd be in the second, third round range. He lands in Seattle at pick number 27. They opt not to get Patrick Queen. What did you think of the Eagles, Mike? I thought they were going to get Jefferson at LSU. Instead, they go with Jalen Reagor. And I already see some Eagles fans annoyed here on Twitter. I mean, listen, they did get a wide receiver, which they obviously needed to try to help out Carson Wentz. That graphic they had, you know, the final four games of the year, Greg Ward was the guy who was getting, you know, a lot of playing time because they were so decimated by injuries and the lack of faith in Jeffrey and Aguilar. But what about Reagor out of TCU? He's a burner ahead of a guy like Jefferson at LSU.
Well, I mean, I think there was a lot of different things on Jefferson. I think Reagor has got really inconsistent hands. I think that's the concern. You know, he can run after the catch. He's tough. He's got good burst. I mean, he's 206, so he's got size. He's a little bit raw. It's going to take time. The Arizona State kid, Ayuk, I mean, that guy really, to me, was I thought was a better player. You know, I thought he had better hands. And so, like, I like for me, if I were the Eagles, I probably would have taken a – now, the fan base would have gone completely bizarre. I would have taken a linebacker. I would have taken Queen or, you know, Murray, and then come back in the second round and try to get KJ Hamler, because I think Hamler can put the ball in the end zone. I think Ruggs and Hamler are the two guys in this draft that are just like, whoa, they're going to get the ball in the end zone. And I know Hamler's 180 pounds and he's small, but he's explosive and he can return. Rieger can return. I just think Rieger's going to be raw. I think if you're an Eagle fan, you got to hope that Rieger comes on really fast. But I have a sense, I have a real sense that Rieger's going to be more impactful, if he's impactful at all, for the 2021 team than he is for the 20 team.
As we go by the numbers, here's who was drafted in the first round. 4 quarterbacks, 6 offensive tackles, 6 cornerbacks, 6 wide receivers. 4 trades were made, and the SEC, 15 prospects in the top 32. It just means more. Closing thoughts, Mike, on round one?
Yeah, I mean, look, I thought it was a fun day. I mean, you know, I think that we obviously are judging this rather quickly without, you know, in hindsight. But I think, look, you know, you got to be able to stay true to your board. You got to do the right thing. I think anytime you take an offensive lineman, I think the Jets getting Becton at 11 is a great pick. You know, all Jet fans want him to take a receiver. I think Joe Douglas did a really good job. He might have gotten the best tackle in the draft at 11. Now, he's got some issues off the field, but this is a big man. I think part of this draft is you got to draft big people that can rush the passer, big people that can protect the passer, and also guys that get the ball into the end zone. I mean, get it into the end zone. And Ruggs, for the Raiders, can get the ball in the end zone. Now, I'm not saying CeeDee Lamb can and Jerry Jeudy can't. I think they're all really good players. But I think of the 6 receivers, I think this game is going to be fun to play. Of the 6 receivers picked in the first round, 3 of them aren't going to be good players. It's just the way the numbers are. Who are the 3? You know, who are the 3? And I think that's got to be a concern.
All right, one more quick break. We'll come back and we'll discuss rounds 2 through 7, some of what moves could be made, which teams are on the clock, all that more coming up next in the GM Shuffle.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
All right, so we're going to have a new GM Shuffle out Monday morning. We're going to break down rounds 2 through 7. Excuse me. Make sure you always follow us on Instagram at GM Shuffle. Wash your hands. Before we get to the Sopranos quarantine, which I tweeted, which I knew Mike would be all over, also posted on Instagram, just a thought here on fashion. We talked all about the rooms, Mike. How about the Zoot Suit Riot? Trey Wingo in the pinstripes or Michael Irvin with whatever he was wearing? Which one would you be more likely to wear?
I'm more of a gray guy. You know, when you got 17 chins and you're fat, you tend to try to get color to tone it down. The brightness would have just made me, I would have looked like a fucking clown if I'd have with Michael, just, you know, all I would have needed was the bozo thing on my head. I mean, seriously. So I thought, you know, I mean, look, I think the one thing that draft really called for was casual. It should have been casual draft day. You didn't need the coat and tie. I mean, Howie Roseman's at his house in a coat and tie. Like, seriously, Howie, you could have wore sweats, you know? I mean, you got dressed up to go to work day.
Yeah, Howie definitely taking it way too seriously. I like Doug Peterson, like he's hanging out. I like people seeing with their kids, right? Just kind of hanging out, having a good time. That's all you need to do. But
yeah,
you know, enjoy the atmosphere.
Look, they're part of it. You're working from home. Hell, they've had to deal with you too. You know, it's like, you know, they got into the picture. It's kind of a rewarding moment, you know, and I think that, you know, you could have had a little bit, you could have a little levity to the situation.
No question. Speaking of levity, somebody who loves The Sopranos like you and I do did the Choose Your Quarantine House. I tweeted it, Adnan Esfarik, and of course, Mike retweeted it, M. Lombardi NFL. It's amazing. There's literally 5 people in each house. There's 6 houses. I'm going to tell you the houses that Mike and I like the most. I don't read through all of them, but I thought house 3, pretty good, Mike. You get Silvio, Adriana, Ralphie, Paulie, and Carmella. Here's my thought. Carmella can cook. Adriana, I mean, golly, obviously enough said. The problem is Ralphie, of course, is a wild card, and Ralphie and Paulie might kill each other, but Sill, I think, might be able to keep the peace there.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, it's funny. Like, who came up with that? Where did that come from?
Somebody DM'd me on Instagram and said, hey, you and Mike are going to love this, and I took it and ran with it right away. So I don't know who came up with it, but this is hysterical.
It's fabulous, you know what I mean? Look, I was like, where the hell is my girl Annalisa Zucca, you know, from Italy? And she was in house four. I was feeling like Sofia Milos wasn't getting the love and respect. That would be a tough house. I mean, could you imagine being in with Richie Aprile, Furio, Janice, Artie Bucco? I mean, like, I picked house one because of Gloria. I mean, Gloria's in house one, so naturally, I picked that. But I mean, that's, you know, you got Melfi in that house. Jackie Jr., you could ignore him. Him and Noah Tannenbaum cancel each other out, you know. I asked my son Mick what house he would go in. He was like all over house three because Carmella's cooking, you know, and Adriana's in there. But how about house six? You know, as much as I love Uncle Junior, could you imagine being in there with AJ and Livia?
House six is the all-time worst. Just to go back for a sec, you mentioned house four. Annalisa, unbelievable. But Artie, like you said, he's so neurotic. I mean, he'd be wearing you out. Janice is a disaster. Furio, I like. You can dance with him. And Richie, I do think, is a psycho. So he's him and Janice together. I mean, forget about it. But you're right. House six, Mike, that's one of the circles of hell, according to Dante. Who the hell's picking house six? Uncle Junior, we love. He's funny as hell, but he's also senile. Johnny Sack, he's just smoking away. AJ Soprano, no, pain in the ass. Hesh? Like, Hesh is going to be gambling, talking about the horses. And Livia Soprano, the matriarch from hell. House six is a disaster.
Oh, my God. And then, like house two on the surface, like, okay, you got Tony, Ginny Sack, Charmaine. I mean, you know Charmaine's just going to be taking shots at Tony the whole time. You got Puss, and then you got the Russian maid arena in there. Like that house has got no, there's nothing in it. And then the question is, if you're in that, who's cooking, right? Charmaine ain't cooking, right? And somebody said to me, well, Ginny Sack can cook. I don't think so. I don't think Ginny Sack. I mean, I saw the sandwiches that Johnny Sack was eating in his house. They didn't look very good. Like Millie's lunch game is way up during quarantine time than ever. You know, it's like at the highest level. I don't think Jenny Sack's lunch game is very high. And then, like, house five, you got Meadow, Bobby, you got Christopher Moltisanti, you got Rosalie and Philly, Leotardo. Like, okay, can Rosalie actually cook? I'm not sure.
Yeah.
It's a hard one.
My second choice after house three, because Carmella could, was house five, because listen, Meadow, love her. Bobby, I think, is a great guy. Plus, I could hang out with the toy trains. I mean, Chrissy and I could watch a lot of old movies. So I said, you know what, Moltisanti would get along great with the movies. Rosalie, I think, is sweet. And Phil, I'm a little worried about. Phil might go psycho. We're going to kind of keep him sequestered. But to your point, I don't know who's cooking. But could you imagine? I'd watch a lot of movies with Chris, and Bobby with the trains would be great.
Yeah, and I think this, that, you know, if you just pick the one character in each house that was definitely going to disregard this, the rules of distance and 6 feet and spatial awareness, you got to think Philly would come down with coronavirus. Like, he's not going to give a shit. Like, he's going to absolutely convince himself that he can't get sick, right? You know? I mean, so you know if you're in house five, you're going to get sick because Phil's going to be out there doing something stupid, you know? You got to take that into consideration.
I knew you were going to be all over house one. As soon as I saw Gloria, I said, okay, Mike's going to house one. But you're right. Noah, that guy's annoying, but you're right. Him and Jackie Jr., you're just going to ignore them. Vito can cook. And then if you have any issues, just go talk to Melfi. Like, you have a shrink literally in the house.
Exactly. I mean, Vito can flat out cook. And, you know, so you got to cook. And you got Gloria and you got Melfi. And you know, like, to me, you got at least have decent conversations. And Junior, Jackie Jr. and Noah, I mean, you know, it's so bad. I mean, I could just ignore that. But to me, this was so good. I love this. Like, what house would you go in? It was the best. And I love that our guy from the Star Ledger, who's formerly with the Star Ledger, was engaging in it too. You know, I thought that was awesome too.
Oh, Alan Sepinwall. He was all over it. That's right.
He loved it. I mean, he loved it too. And you know, like the one thing too is like, where's Jeannie Cusimano? She wasn't in enough, but the actress who played I Dream of Jeannie, like, she couldn't be in this because she actually was just a dream character, right? So I think they covered it really well. I loved it.
Just to reiterate just how bad House 6 is. Literally, close your eyes, everybody, and think about living in a house. Right now, I know everyone's stir crazy. Everybody wants to go get a haircut. Everybody wants to go to a bar, get a drink, have some food. But think about if you're living in this house. This is how we're going to close the GM Shuffle. Uncle Junior, Johnny Sack, AJ Soprano, Hesh Rabkin, and Livia Soprano. No chance, Mike.
Talk to you Monday.